It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, lads and lasses of all ages, welcome to the show. It is episode number 366 of Two Nerds in a Pod. It is a Monday evening, January 12th, 2025. That means it's time to get nerdy. Here on Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy, we are going to take you on a journey through the game of the year, 2025. No, not the one you've heard of. The one that Mr. Nice Guy and special guest Spenis the Menace think deserves the honors. This is our regular yearly Game of the Year retrospective, and we are thrilled to be doing it here for you tonight. Mr. Nice Guy, good to see you as always. I hope you are hydrated and ready to go.
I'm hydrated and ready to go, Mac. Good to see you. And we have a guest with us, like you said, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm back.
Spenis, how the heck are you?
It has been a good long journey working through what was going to make my list.
Mm-hmm.
My ventures have taken me numerous places as well to go on top of that. As Ruckus and the Menace has developed its journey, I did get to go to Atlanta. I'm wearing my Brave City Connect hat and got to do the Southern Fried Gaming Expo this year, which was a blast in and of itself.
Nice.
I also have now taken up disc golf, so how Lon has his laser tag, I now do the Captain America thing and throw discs.
Let's go.
Nice.
That's dope.
And Christmas, I sent Lom a picture of it, I think about a couple weeks ago, that now I've got a big gaming PC. So the future for this project is bright, especially on my end, as I will get to touch more things that I was previously not going to be able to.
Welcome to the fold with your gaming PC, sir.
Yep.
He just won't touch grass anymore. He'll touch a lot of video games, but he will not touch grass.
That's okay. Grass is overrated, and it's always greener over there.
I still plan to be disc golfing, too, so it's going to have purpose.
Okay, so fairway driver or mid-range driver? What's your go-to?
Depends on the distance and the type of shot I want to make.
I will make a mid-range driver work.
Well, is this a golf podcast? As much as I love y'all's hobbies, we're losing our people.
Okay, fine. Mr. Nice Guy wants to get with the thing, so let's do it. This is the Game of the Year 2025 conversation, but before we actually get into what games made the top five for each of you, we'll alternate back and forth. I want us to throw out some honorable mentions. What just wasn't quite good enough, or what wasn't quite spectacular enough to make it? I trust you fellas have some honorable mentions for us.
Yes.
I have one, but I want to hear from our guest first. Spenis, what you got, my man?
Yeah, Spenis, start us off.
My honorable mentions, also known as this year, the first three outs. And the first one, Pokemon Legends ZA. It was one that I got to enjoy. The exploration's addicting. And granted, it was such a small space. There was a lot of things that were lackluster with it that held it back as far as quality and stuff, but Game Freak is not known for that.
Mm.
It was still a lot of fun to play, and Blueprints had held this spot until recently, so I did have that one miss the cut. The second one that also was on the first three out, the pre-2025 number one, Ghost of Yotei. Still a solid game. Had accolades that would have been top five worthy in most years, but the revenge plot was too bland. Gonna throw a Top Gun reference here, and that this game just kind of lost its love and feeling.
Whoa, that love and feeling.
y'all are some boomers, man. We got some baby boomers on the pod tonight, everybody.
Top Gun was released in 1986. It's not that bad. I mean,
yeah, come on.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
And then the game that just missed the cut for me, Dispatch.
Ooh, Mac, that's a game you would like.
A Telltale style game. And the voice acting, that was great. You brought in Moist Critical, you brought in Jacksepticeye, and it's not often that you have a game just have a character voiced by Young Gravy that says, Kobe.
Spoilers.
Oh, that was not even an important element of the game, but it's ad hoc with partnered with Critical Role, and I even got Ruckus hooked on playing it for a run as well. So it made my cut, and it just missed the top five because everything above this point had an open critic score of 90 or better.
Nice.
So I played banger after banger.
Good year for games.
Yes, it sure sounds like it. Well, Mr. Nice Guy, what didn't make the cut for you, my dude?
Yeah, so I'm going to be super short here. It's a tongue twister. I'm just going to say Bollocks Pit. That's the one game that I want to talk about that did not make it, and I want to talk about it because it is an indie. It is a really good game, and it definitely deserves your attention. Played it on the Steam Deck, on the go. It's effectively a block breaker where you're shooting balls from the character that you control, but you're also scrolling upwards at the same time, right? So kind of like the Space Invaders aspect of trying to shoot stuff before it hits you, but also you have upgrades and you can combine the balls into different things based on the abilities that you're collecting as you go. And then on top of all that, Mac, there's a central hub so that in between levels, you go back to the hub and you harvest different materials so that you can upgrade your world, so that you can upgrade your characters, strength, abilities, all these things. And then go down to new levels and find new bosses to battle. And I think it was $15 on Steam. Really, really reasonable priced. Pick up and play. I recommend Bollocks Pit. Check it out.
I also did get to play Bollocks Pit, and it didn't go as far up on mine because there was a game that took the concepts, granted not of the brick breaker, but of just the roguelite elements that did it better.
Ooh,
got it.
Okay, well, we are going to get there. But before we get your number five picks, I would like to say that our trivia that I'll be posing to you two in between each of these segments is focused this year entirely on game awards in years past.
Okay.
And I'm returning to the old original format. Instead of multiple choice, there is going to be one specific thing wrong about the statement. You have to correct it as we know it. Actually rules.
Okay.
These days. But you don't have to say actually.
Okay, fair.
Trivia question number one. Because of a large financial sponsorship, but universally regarded as cringy, in the 2016 Game Awards, there was featured Astrobot from Playroom. This included a person dressed up in the mascot suit during the show and a whole commercial break, including a 20-second ad in the style of a Mortal Kombat game. There is one and only one thing about that statement there that is incorrect.
Playroom. So I think it might be 2016 is the thing that's wrong, because I don't remember that game being out at that point. I remember 2016. I think that was the year. Was that when Overwatch came out?
Overwatch was Game of the Year winner in 2016.
See, I got that memory. I got that memory, y'all.
Yeah.
In case you didn't know, we're going back almost a decade, and your boy still knows what won Game of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could either be 2016, or it could be the Mortal Kombat reference, simply because Astrobot and Mortal Kombat really don't go together at all.
That is where I am at as well.
Yeah.
But that is if it was even Astrobot's Playroom. No, because we would have been between Mortal Kombat 10 and 11 at that point, because 11 was not released until much later. So I probably am going to be in agreement there that it's Mortal Kombat was not the theming of the Astrobot side.
I'm going to go with you, Spinnis. I'm going to go on this journey with you and say it was Mortal Kombat was the thing that's wrong.
Okay. So you may be surprised to learn that Astrobot from Playroom was not the mascot. It was, in fact, Schick Hydrobot.
Hey.
Yes, the multi-bladed company of razors, Schick, had themselves a mascot named Hydrobot, and in the 2016 Game Awards, they had a person walking around in a mascot suit for it, and had a Mortal Kombat style, like SNES Mortal Kombat pixel style stuff with the Schick Hydrobot. It was cringy and ridiculous.
Yeah, I forgot about the Hydrobot.
Well, hey, there is no worries there. This is something that I think all of us would probably have preferred to have left buried in the past. So let's move on to bigger and better, my dudes. We've got picks for our number 5 game of the year. Spenis, as guest, we would love for you to go first.
This is definitely going to be something that Nice Guy will probably give me a hard time for. Number 5 for me, 7 years of development heaven and hype later, this game did deliver. Number 5 for me is Hollow Knight Silksong from Team Cherry. Hype and demand were warranted from diehard fans, as there had been so much time. The announcement being on Game Pass kind of caught my intrigue, and I went and started playing. But I am not a Metroidvania guy, and the farming on this and the constant backtracking—it's like it's expecting you to want to get lost, and it kind of drew me back. Difficulty was brutal at launch. Not that I couldn't do any things because of gamer literacy, but there was just too many instances where I thought the walk back made it dissatisfying. And I did a dumb thing in not playing the first Hollow Knight before even giving this one a go. But it did pick up some solid accolades. It won Best Action Adventure. It was the Steam Awards Game of the Year. It was the PC Game of the Year at the Golden Joysticks, which is the other credible game award, and it was 4th in Ultimate Game of the Year, and also won the Best Self-Published Indie. Can't really complain too much with Silksong, as it was an Open Critic 91, Metacritic 90, and I also gave it a 90.
Nice. Now, Spenis, you mentioned that you're not very much of a Metroidvania person. Would this be your favorite Metroidvania? Your favorite in a genre that's not really big for you?
It is probably the best executed one that I've seen. It did a great job of what it was supposed to do.
What more could you ask for, huh?
True.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Spenis. Mr. Nice Guy, we have a number 5 pick from you.
Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, it would be so easy to make a top 5 list that completely aligns with what the industry has told us are the top 5 games, or I could go with the top 5 games that I enjoyed this year and that really meant something to me. And that's what I did this year, and that's generally what we do every single year, right? So my number 5 game this year is one that got some recognition, but definitely was not a Game of the Year nominee, and that's Battlefield 6. So it's hard to create something that gets the people's attention away from Call of Duty. That's just the reality. Granted, Call of Duty kind of fell off this year, in my opinion. Black Ops 7, not quite what it should have been. But even had it been elite, had it been really good, Battlefield 6 made a lot of innovative moves, did a lot of things to keep our attention, and proved why you don't need to be an annual release in the shooter space to be something that's really, really memorable. The audio, as we know, they put a lot of work into. In fact, I believe they were up for Best Audio Design at the Game Awards. They may even have won.
They won it.
They won it. Thank you, Spenis.
They were the only one to steal one from Clair Obscur Expedition 33.
Yeah, so I mean, if you're playing this game with a headset, it just completely makes the experience so much better. And they added new modes, not just the Warzone-style mode, not just the fall from the sky and shoot everybody mode, but they added a new mode called Gauntlet that's super fun, that's super fast paced with friends. If you aren't in the mood for a big scale battle, you can do that. I have 2 groups of people I play Battlefield 6 with. One's a group of dads, one's a group of people who are a little bit younger, and we always have a blast when we play, creating memories. And honestly, Mac, one of the things about Battlefield that always makes me hesitant to buy it is it going to have longevity? And this year it does. So shout out to the team that made this game. Really, really well done. Plays well, feels well. No issues like there were with Battlefield 2042. My number 5 game of the year.
All right. Well, are you guys ready for another trivia question before we move on to number 4?
Yep.
Let's do it.
Let's roll.
Since 2014, the Game Awards has added many different categories for consideration and even left some categories behind. But only the category of Developer of the Year has only been awarded a single time, because after being awarded in the first inaugural 2014 Game Awards show, it was never seen as an award again. What single thing in that statement is incorrect, gentlemen?
I can't think of a time in recent memory when Game of the Year, or rather when Developer of the Year was an award, but I think it's the year. I think that was the most detailed part of that statement, and so I'm going to go with the year on this one.
You don't think it was 2014?
I don't think Developer of the Year was ever
a thing.
You would accuse me of fabricating the entire thing?
Something is telling me that I don't think it was Developer of the Year as the award.
Interesting. Well, let's see what Mac has to say.
Spenis, you are correct. Developer of the Year was not the single.
Well done.
It was Best Remaster is an award that showed up only in 2014 and 2014 only. Developer of the Year showed up in 2014 and I believe 2015. So they awarded that twice before they dropped it as a category from the Game Awards. So, you know, not much better.
I think that was one of those awards that got repurposed into Best Game Direction or something along those lines.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much. Well done, gentlemen. Now we move on to number four. Number four pick, Spenis, what have you got for us?
All right, number four for me was an Open Critic and Metacritic 91. I also scored this a 90. An iconic Nintendo character plus destructible environments equals big fun. This is Donkey Kong Bonanza from Nintendo. It was a Switch 2 Direct that put the game into my attention. Bought it pretty much the first day that I had a Switch 2 available. It was the team that made Super Mario Odyssey that brought this game together. I also enjoyed the 2017 title. Music is a big point of emphasis, especially in Donkey Kong games, and it does this extremely well, especially with bringing in Jenny Kidd as the voice of young Pauline. There are Donkey Kong love letters in this game from the Donkey Country style levels to bringing Diddy and Dixie and Cranky Kong just to give Donkey Kong a hard time. Draws right to the roots of the tie-wearing gorilla that we enjoy and his history. But what holds it back? I felt like there was a difficulty spike toward the back end and some hitboxes that were a touch unfair. And even though it brought the biggest plot twist of the game, that narratively was enjoyable, there were just a couple of times where the difficulty spike was very frustrating, especially with certain mechanics that they wanted you to use in the game, just kind of not having the best feel to it. And the individual elements excelled, but there were games that brought a better whole package. It was a Critics' Choice and was nominated for Console and Ultimate Game of the Year at the Golden Joysticks, picked up two Game of the Year nominees, and was the winner of Best Family Game at the Game Awards. And for me, I did enjoy Donkey Kong Bonanza. And the only reason why, because of the tie-in rating that I moved it up over Silksong, is a little tiebreaker I called a barrier for the not-as-enfranchised gamer. If you are not as enfranchised in the Donkey Kong franchise, this one is a little easier to pick up than Silksong as far as not being as enfranchised into Hollow Knight.
If I could ask you to drill down just on that bit, little metric there a little bit more, are you meaning to say that it's easier as somebody who hops in partway through this franchise to pick up because the controls are easier, because the lore is less important? You know, where's the thing there?
It is a combination of lore, difficulty, because Hollow Knight did have some brutal difficulty, especially at launch.
Yep.
This game was a little... It had a little...
Look, you guys just need to get good and learn how to pogo at 45 degrees. That's a you problem.
What do you mean, you guys? What do you mean, you guys?
Oh, sorry. I meant you guys in the royal you sense, not targeting you two specifically. I was targeting Galvatron.
And also, I will say that this game was targeted toward a younger audience as well. So it is an easier game for, say, someone who also was too young to pick up the original Donkey Kong games to go into this in the franchise as well.
All right, I have one last question, but I must know. Does it include the DK rap?
That one I don't believe ended up coming in there, but the Bonanzas do involve a musical element where you have to actually put together a record and run it.
Not good enough. No top spot for Donkey Kong. Over to you, Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah, so my number four game, and it's interesting, man. In years past, when I thought about what the best game was, it was always going to be the game that was not necessarily the most complex, but was the total package of, oh, they got really great voice acting. The graphics are fitting for what they're trying to get across. The gameplay is solid, and there's some type of innovation. And what I've found this year in particular is that innovation wasn't always necessary. And so I went with a game that was just pure fun for my number four. I went with Mario Kart World. Picked up the Switch 2 for Christmas and have not had this much fun playing a Mario Kart game in a long time. They did enough that it doesn't feel like it's simply DLC to Mario Kart 8. There are new items. There are new tracks. But even the gameplay, like, and this could just be psychological because it's been a while since I played Mario Kart 8. It seems tighter. It's a great family game. I'm kind of surprised it beat out Donkey Kong for best family game since you can play it with more people. But Mac, you know, if you're someone who played Mario Kart back when it came out on the Super Nintendo and the Nintendo 64, and you haven't played it in a while, this is the game to get you back into it. This is what I'll end on for this game. Nintendo has always kind of been notorious for making their games anti-competitive. Like once upon a time, they came out with Super Smash Bros. Melee, and there were all these advanced techniques, wave dashing, L-canceling, and it got a really big competitive community. And then they released the next one and purposefully watered it down. This Mario Kart teeters right on that line of having competitive advanced techniques, but also being super fun and super accessible to younger gamers by making it so that you have rails on, like when you're bowling, right? So you can't bowl in the gutter. They make it so you can't fall off the track. The Joy-Cons you can twist so you can drive that way, just like Mario Kart 8. It's just the full package of a game that's fun and reminds us why we play games. Shout out to Mario Kart World for being awesome.
Oh, falling off the track, you still can. The problem is that you have to do it in a rather fancy way or misfire.
Yeah, yeah.
Or misfire on something you're trying for, or try to get a little too cute.
It's hard. It's hard to do it when you have that setting on.
For me, Mario Kart World played too slow at times.
Really?
It tried to do a whole bunch of stuff like a Forza Horizon with the open world stuff, and it just felt, everything felt empty. There were so many things that, in terms of a gameplay, like, Nintendo has that down. But in terms of some of the other, like, bells and whistles that you would have hoped for that came along with this, they missed the boat.
Hard disagree. Spinus is playing on 50cc if you think that it's too slow. You got to step it up, bro.
I played enough to know that I'm like, something's missing.
We'll agree to disagree.
Agreed. Let's go ahead and move on as passions flare. Before we get to number three, though, a little bit of trivia just to ground us here. So this question... In the 2022 ceremony of the Game Awards, a 15-year-old boy who had been a guest on InfoWars twice by the age of 12 followed the Elden Ring developers on stage and at the conclusion of the acceptance speech gave his own dedication to Bob Dole.
Boom, I know the answer for this one.
I know the answer as well.
One thing.
It was to Bill Clinton.
Yep.
It was to Bill Clinton. His rabbi is what he said, right?
Well done, gentlemen. Dedicated it to that. It's wild to think that Bob Dole's the thing in that sentence that's too crazy. but hey, that was 2022. Gentlemen.
Pretty sure he's been banned from the Game Awards for future years.
I believe you could be correct. I think he's also banned from a lot of polite society. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on. We have our third choice for games of the year. Spenis, what have you got in your number three spot?
How Nice Guy also has had games that just missed the cut for the actual Game Award nominee for Game of the Year. This one is also one of them that strangely missed the cut for Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 to take in a slot. It got an open critic score of a 91, Metacritic score of a 91, and I scored it a 93. And if you hear me say this name, he has made another banger. Joseph Ferris, you've made another one.
Another one.
Split Fiction is number three for me. This game was so much fun to play. It's worth the $50. I used a friend pass to experience this one as I played with a longtime friend who I had not played a game with in years. and we banged it out in a matter of 3-4 sessions of just playing this, and it was my second most hyped game post Game Awards 24. Price points have always been great for a Haze Light game. And even though it's under the EA umbrella, and this one is my AAA game of the year. Yes, everything above this went into a different game type as far as publishers. The story felt shockingly relatable to modern times, with characters telling a compelling narrative and developed well. It got third place in Ultimate Game of the Year at the Golden Joysticks. It came away empty-handed at the Game Awards, but not without some good games shutting it out. The field just ended up getting so crowded, but for me, Split Fiction stuck out because it's a cooperative game that, and Haze Light just does great games in that field.
Yeah, real quick, Spanish, you and I played through some of, what was that game called?
It Takes Two.
It Takes Two.
We did It Takes Two, and I would be down to do more of another point in time.
Me too. I got a 3-day weekend coming up, man. Let's do it, for real.
I did It Takes Two as well with a friend of mine, which is why, though I haven't played Split Fiction, I'm so glad to hear you put it up here in the top five, because I got a copy specifically to play with a friend. So I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah, it's worth it.
Nice. Mr. Nice Guy, what did you have in your number three spot?
Yeah, so number three is interesting because it's a game that, it's one of those games where I feel like you have to, if you played it, recognize its brilliance. And honestly, after we get done tonight, I may go play some more of this game. I like games, you know, we always use the phrase on here, baller on a budget, right? Mm-hmm. Who doesn't like to get a good deal? Who doesn't like to get a game that's less than the $60 or $70 AAA priced game and get dozens and dozens and dozens of hours out of it? And this is one of those games. Yeah, exactly. Chef's Kiss, right? This is one of those games that did that for me this year. That's Hades 2. And we probably should mention where we're playing these games. I'm playing this one on the Steam Deck. And the idea that you can... This is going to make me sound like an old man. The idea that you can take a game like this on the go and get so much time out of it, and it has so much depth, and it's not just a roguelite in the sense that you try to do stuff and then you go back and you've leveled up. There's endless dialogue in this game. Like, the amount of time that they put into making sure that your experience continually evolves is just one of the most impressive feats that I've ever experienced in gaming. I really like games in that Diablo top-down style, and I'm also a huge fan in terms of indies of Bastion, and this game is almost reminiscent aesthetically to that type of game. The gameplay is tight, the bosses are hard, the ramp up after the initial tutorial that's like an unofficial tutorial is not so fast that you get fed up, but is enough that it keeps you engaged. And there's just the right amount of frustration to keep you saying one more run. And so, to me, this is a game that maybe didn't deserve all the hype that it got, but definitely deserves to be in my top five this year.
I'm holding.
All right. Well, gentlemen, let's do another trivia question before we go on to number two. The iconic Game Awards trophy was created by the visionaries at Industrial Light and Magic, who have also done amazing work in film, including Lord of the Rings trilogy, Love Story 2050, Ghost in the Shell, and much, much more. All right. What aspect of that is incorrect?
What do you think, Spenis? I think I know, but what do you think?
Trying to figure this out here because it sounds like something that it's either the company or that they had nothing to do with Lord of the Rings.
I think your head is where my head is. It's got to be one of those three movies that he mentioned. Also, much, much more is so subjective, right? So that could be it, too. I could say that and be right no matter what.
Now, for the record, I made all these questions myself. These didn't come from anybody. These came from Mac's head after reading, you know, the wikis on every year of the Game Awards.
I'm going to go with you, though, Spenis. I thought it was one of the movies that was my gut instinct.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with you and say Lord of the Rings.
Well, you guys are close. You almost got there. It is that not Industrial Light and Magic. Those guys are probably most notable for their work on Star Wars and other movies. It's Weta Workshop, who were the VFX on the original Lord of the Rings. They also did Hobbit. Love Story 2050 is in fact a real show. It's a Bollywood you know, I don't have time for it, but it's a little funny joke there. Weta Workshop and that is Weta Workshop, not Industrial Light and Magic. Well, gentlemen, now time for our number two choices.
Getting down to the wire.
Spenis, what do you got?
And this was the reason why I held. My number two was actually Hades 2.
Mm-hmm.
Universal acclaim brought hype, but how it performed made it worth the fight. I had heard of this game through multiple means, but the acclaim and press from the press and the players, along with recognition, made me decide, hey, I'm going to pick this thing up. I didn't get my hands on the first time when I started playing it. And I felt very comfortable once my hands were on it. Becomes very hard to put down in terms of session of what I hoped was going to be about, 20, 30 minutes, 2 hours later.
One more run.
Playing very easily, every bit of the run just purposefully put your character in a stronger position and continue to want to go in again and again and again. It stretched me as a player healthily, and every run gives you plenty to discover to get further understanding of what you want to do, and it piqued the interest to continue to learn it. All of this coming from just a couple of runs playing, and that was a testament to just what it brought. Lots of bells and whistles and upgrades that can feel overwhelming, but once you know what you're finding, where you're finding it, tracking things with forget-me-nots, building can get creative and addictive, and getting that really good run that lasts a while had satisfaction to it. It got 3 Golden Joysticks nominations, was nominated for 6 Game Awards, including Game of the Year, and it won the Best Action Game. It was the highest game rated by the press this year, as Open Critic and Metacritic also had it at 95. I gave it a 96, as this game really was a standout game, and I need to get back on it at some point. But it is, but I can get into it without missing a beat.
Mr. Nice Guy.
The only thing I'll say in response to that, real quick, because now I've already said that that's on my list. Listening to videos and just different people talking about Hades 2, yes, it's a masterpiece. It is not the best game I've ever played. And when I hear people say that Hades 2 is the best game I've ever played, it's subjective, but I also think you have not played a lot of games, right? I mean, like, is Hades 2 better than Grand Theft Auto 5? Is Hades 2 better than Red Dead Redemption 2? And I'm not just a Rockstar fan, but I mean, those are two games that are objectively some of the best games ever made. And I don't see how, if you've played games like that, that you could say that Hades 2 is the best game that you've ever played. If you played Half-Life Alyx, how could you say that Hades 2 is the best game you've ever played? If you played Fallout 3, how could you say that Hades 2 is the best game you've ever played? Portal 2! There's a lot of games out there that are on my top games of all time list that are just objectively better than Hades 2. And it is a great game. That's why it's number 3 for me.
I didn't put it at number 1 because there was a game this year that is that.
I'm excited to hear what it is for you.
Well, but first, Nice Guy, don't glide over this. Obviously, go ahead, torch the whole industry.
Yeah.
Torch everybody who's like, Hades 2 is good. That's fine. Tell me, Mr. Nice Guy, what is your number two choice?
So my number two choice, and this is something that'll be controversial, because it's not a game that probably makes most people's top 5 list, and I really don't care. Mac, if you know me, you know that I'm a huge fan of Ready Player One, and I'm a huge fan of the metaverse, mm-hmm. and I'm a huge fan of experiences that give you choice when it comes to how you want to play the game and how you want to interact with other people who are playing the game. The developers set up a world. They say, here's the world. Yes, there are objectives. Yes, there are rules. But go out and you decide how you want to play. And for me, this game is the game that won Best Multiplayer Game of the Year. And that is Ark Raiders, is my number two game. Playing it on the PlayStation 5 this year, I love that you can go out and you can play the objective, that you can meet random people in the world and choose to work together. and communicate through the proxy chat that they've so brilliantly set up. This game is $40. You're getting a lot of gameplay out of it, and it plays like a AAA. It kind of follows that Monster Hunter format that I'm such a huge fan of, where you get dropped in a world, you have 30 minutes to go do what you need to do, collect resources, kill some baddies, explore, meet up with some other people, and then exfil. And it's such a brilliant formula that isn't put into that many games or enough games, so that you know, Mac, when you hop on, you can spend 30 minutes and be done, right? That's such a cool thing. You can shoot other people. You never know who's friendly. You never know who's not. It has that Walking Dead element that I really, really like. And I use the Ready Player One analogy because even though it's flat screen, you go out, you meet people, you determine how you want to go about it, how you want to tackle it. And I think that it's brilliant, and this is what I'll end on. If they can keep it going and keep this games as service aspect hyped with new content, with support, with good servers, and with our attention, this is going to go down as one of the best multiplayer games of all time.
Wow. Stout praise. Bennis, if you had something, otherwise I've got trivia.
I have nothing on this because Arc Raiders was not on my list. It does kind of stun me that Arc Raiders ascended this quickly this high for you. But at the same time, I'm like, I can see where you're coming from.
It's not a Spennis game, but I love it.
And it's not a Mac game, probably. But that's okay. I love that you love it. I love that it's there. Now, real quick, I just want to give a shout out. We've had some people chiming in the chat as we are doing this live. Galvatron here with us live gives us his top five in order, 5-1. Doom the Dark Ages, Hades 2, Death Stranding 2, Claire Obscura Expedition 33, and Kingdom Come Deliverance 2. And Antonio says MLB The Show 2025, as that's the only 2025 release that he's been playing. And I know he's not the only one.
All good. All good.
All right. Well, some trivia for you before we go to our number one. The game that has taken home the most game awards in the history of the game awards was Last of Us Part 2. With 13 nominations and 9 wins.
I mean, we already know that's not accurate, right?
I mean, what's not accurate? There's one thing that's not accurate about it.
It's not The Last of Us.
Well, actually, the whole statement has holes.
Oh?
Yeah, go for it.
First of all, the one that has the most is going to be talked about here later.
Spoiler alert.
12 nominations and 9 wins, but The Last of Us was the previous record holder of it. In 2020, it got 7.
Part 2.
Yeah, Last of Us Part 2 got 7. Yeah.
Agree.
Okay, you are correct. What we were looking for was Last of Us Part 2 only had 11 nominations and 7 awards. I guess I must have miscounted with the 13 and 9, but yes, Expedition 33 was the game that got, I guess, 12, not 13, and 9 nominations and 9 wins.
Well, 13 including a finalist for Player's Voice.
Okay, then that's probably how I got the 13 nominations. Bonus points for Spennis the Menace. All right, gentlemen.
And before we get into our number ones, let's go back and flashback our way through the previous 5 runs of Game of the Year.
What is this?
Who's hosting?
In 2020, I had selected The Last of Us Part 2, and Nice Guy selected Half-Life Alyx.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In 2021, It Takes Two and Halo Infinite, although retroactively, a year later, said Metroid Dread.
Yep, good memory.
In 2022, the only year that Lom and I ever matched, and I think it's going to still be the case, God of War Ragnarok.
Yes, sir.
2023, I've now gone back and played more of it ever since I've had it there. Baldur's Gate 3, while Lom selected Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. And last year, it was Balatro and Astrobot. What will it be this year? It's the worst kept secret for me that my pick is Claire Obscura Expedition 33. It is the absolute worst kept secret. It is an all-time great video game, masterfully crafted from the ground up. It was very limited fanfare right away. there was no real marketing. So everything that it had up through that point was word of mouth of excellence in how the game performed. And the story behind it, as this was a debut studio from ex-Ubisoft employees, as Gian Broche with a few others to find Sandfall, but he ended up finding undiscovered talent that helped. Jennifer Svedberg-Yen and Lorien Testard, and also brought in a voice acting all-stars with Jennifer English and Ben Starr, alongside Hollywood's Charlie Cox, Andy Serkis, who's Gollum in Lord of the Rings, for Victor Borba, and Alice Duport-Percier, who was the vocal composer. So the stories behind the development, how it unfolded, brought an undeniable, well-rounded, purposeful excellence into every element. Once I got my hands on it, was hooked right away, and was immediately sold on what Sandfall had created. I took a significant amount of time after finishing the main game to play other things, completely forgot about the post-game content, and then I was back for more, and seeing content all around to make it realize that I needed to go back. I spent about 35 hours on the main game to finish the story. Free DLC ultimately brought my return. Over 35 hours later, completed the final boss of the DLC, and came away with a rare feat on my PlayStation account, a platinum trophy.
Let's go.
Going through that, the game further reminded me of why I consider this game an all-timer on my list, and a game that has and will impact the industry for those who come after.
All right, Mr. Nice Guy, tough to follow up, but what's your number one pick?
Yeah, eloquently said, Spenis. And I do have to say, it's so weird that I didn't play Clair Obscur yet, because Spenis spoke to the importance of word of mouth, and I've heard multiple people tell me that I need to play that game. And just the lack of time has made me say, you know what, I'm not going to play it until I can really enjoy it. So who knows, maybe that's over this long weekend we have coming up. But Mac, my number one is... It's I'm almost biased in saying this, but it's a game that means a lot to me, and it's a game that means a lot to the gaming industry. So many times we see franchises go away. We see IPs go away. And maybe a sequel has even been announced, or it's been in development, and they keep saying it's coming out in a year, it's coming out in 3 months, it's coming out in 6 months, and then it just gets forgotten, and maybe it never comes out. So when we reach a point where one of these games actually does come out, and actually does triumph, and become something that's so beloved, that's so deep, that has so much content, and that's so beautifully made, I think it's important that we celebrate those games. Hollow Knight was one of my top five games of all time, and so I was very, very excited when Hollow Knight Silksong came out. I absolutely loved the game. I loved the frustration. I loved the tight controls. I loved that, similar to Arc Raiders 2, they let you pick how you want to play, by giving you access to so many different types of gadgets, that if you want to kind of cheese a boss and just let the little flies go get the boss with the poison, you can cheat and do that. Or if you're a hardcore purist, you can do it with your sword, right? And you can memorize the movements, and you can beat Savage Beast Fly without Googling how to do it. Like, there's just so much depth to the game. And Mac, the fact that there's an Act 1, there's an Act 2, there's an Act 3, and then I believe there's a final act as well, if I'm remembering. It's been a while since I played it. Like, and who knows, maybe even more coming in the future. Shout out to Team Cherry for giving us something and proving that even if you take a super long time to make a game, you can charge $20. And you can make something that will go down in history as, in my opinion, one of the best games ever made. I had a blast with this, and I could talk about it all day.
Fantastic. I'm inclined toward you as well, because Silksong is one of the few games released in 2025 that I actually played. You know me, I'm behind the times always. But yeah, and Cleric Obscura Expedition 33, Spenis, definitely on my list. So, that being said, those are our picks. That's games of the year, 2025. This brings us to the end of our show, but we can't leave without doing what we always do, and that is sharing the cool, nerdy things that we've been into. Gentlemen, what you been watching? What you been playing?
All you, Spanish. You go first, man.
now that I've got my big beast of a gaming PC now.
Yeah, you do.
Indiana Jones and the Great Circle finally got some touch. I did do Doom the Dark Ages on it. I've been going back. I mean, a lot of my run to wrap up Clair Obscur Expedition 33. And this game, it does allow you that liberty to go nuts and build as crazy as you want. Build as crazy as you want it in certain ways, as long as you're able to farm the colors of Lumina to be able to get everything and piece it all together. There's a lot of insane stuff, and the score on it, and every single plot point has zero wasted motion. Everything has a purpose. I'd even watching YouTube videos at times, theorizing all the elements and how they have a purpose. It's that deep. But I've also been playing Baldur's Gate 3, getting a run with that, and we made a campaign where I'm now running a bard, College of Swords bard, so I'm gonna be busted.
For sure. Mr. Nice Guy, how about you?
So as far as watching, we're doing a rewatch of Stranger Things. No spoilers, because I still got to watch the most current season, but really, really, really have been enjoying that. And then I think I'm on season 3 of Fear the Walking Dead right now. So those are the two shows that I've really had time to watch. As far as playing, I've been playing on the AYN Thor, which I've really, really been loving. I did hop back into Dead Cells on there, which has been super fun. And as far as modern stuff, I was telling Spenis before the show started, I wasn't going to pick up Black Ops 7. Hashtag baller on a budget. Best Buy had it on sale, and I had a Best Buy certificate that they just emailed me. So I picked up Black Ops 7 this weekend and dove into that.
Okay, between the discount and the gift certificate, how much did you pay?
I paid $25 for Black Ops 7.
Baller on a budget.
Yeah, I mean, for a $70 game, that's pretty solid. So I'll take that all day, every day. What you been into, Mac?
For me, I've been playing a game called Cave Blazers. Shout out to Ishmobile, who's here with us.
Ishmobile!
Got me back into that when we had an IRL hang. I've also been playing Stardew Valley with a friend, and also playing Creeper World 4, kind of my go-to sort of relaxation game. I'll play it while I'm listening to audiobooks or whatever. As for what I've been watching lately, mostly just Taskmaster and the Amazon Wheel of Time series. I'm in season 3 currently.
Nice. We got a couple people in the chat, maybe just one, who shared. I know there's others in the chat who kind of said what their games of the year were. Mac, what do you see in the chat, man?
Sure. So far, obviously we shared some of those. As for watching and playing, Ishmobile's chiming in with Cave Blazers, FTL for the playing, and the watching, Death by Lightning, and Who Framed Roger Rabbit, a classic before everything was green screen.
Classic.
Mr. Nice Guy, would you be so kind as to take us home, sir?
Yeah, thank you everybody for tuning in and hanging out. Go play Hollow Knight Silksong if you haven't. Spenis would say go play Clair Obscur. And more importantly, please go check out Spenis's podcast. It's called The Ruckus and the Menace Podcast. It is a sports podcast.
It is a sports forward podcast. We've pivoted a little bit. We do talk a good bit about video games, movies, and other little pieces there, but sports is on the main focus. We just had Alex Mann on for our year in review. We also are still doing our YouTube series right now for our Super Bowl races. Ruckus is doing the Las Vegas Raiders with Viva Las Raiders, and I'm doing a Carolina Panthers one called This One's for Sam, talking about Sam Mills. And Lom, remember how I said I was going to do a Seattle Mariners March to October years ago?
Sure.
2025, I finally did it.
Nice.
And you might want to go back and watch that series through, called Swung On and Belted, as that was my... And that was me running through a Seattle Mariners March to October.
Awesome. Well, be sure to check out his podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Spenis, thank you for being here as always, my friend.
Anytime, and I know we're going to be back at it again next year.
Mm-hmm. We will be back at it next year. Be excellent to each other. Play video games. Have a nice night. See y'all. Deuces.
Bye.